And voters in Turkey are casting their ballots in nationwide municipal elections, where the ruling AK party is determined to reclaim control of the major cities Istanbul and Ankara from the opposition. Warm welcome to our studios in the capital, Tehran. This is Niz. Thanks for joining us. Nearly 6 months into Israel's genocidal war in Gaza, the regime's attacks on all the areas of the besieged territory, including hospitals and displaced people inside, continue. According to Palestinian officials, the regime forces have killed over 400 civilians in the area of Al-Shifa Hospital since its siege began 3 weeks ago. The regime has also destroyed over 1,000 nearby homes, as 107 Palestinians are still trapped at the hospital. Meanwhile, malnutrition has claimed the lives of a child and a young man in Kamal Adwan Hospital. Fresh strikes on aid seekers near Gaza City have killed at least 17 Palestinians, while injuring 25 others. At least 11 Palestinians were killed in the Israeli bombardment of Bani Suhaila neighborhood in the eastern parts of Khan Yunis. In the north, Israeli artillery fire targeted civilians east of Jabalia. The death toll from the Israeli genocide tops 32,700. Israeli forces, meanwhile, are pressing ahead on their genocidal onslaught on Gaza, leaving more deaths and destruction across the besieged territory. Our correspondent Mutiaba Musaba joined us earlier from the central city of Deir al-Bala to give us the latest on the situation.
Israeli forces continued committing more crimes and massacres against the Palestinian people. Over the last night, the Israeli occupation forces committed an appalling massacre near Al-Kuwait roundabout after attacking and killing at least 12 Palestinian civilians of the members of the popular committees that were formed to secure and to distribute the delivery of the humanitarian needs and necessities to the people in Gaza City and the northern part of Gaza Strip. It is not the only crime the Israeli occupation forces commit against the Palestinian, against those committees. However, it would never be the last, as the Israeli occupation forces are still insisting those committees in a way that deepens the suffering of the Palestinian people there. As you know, that on Friday, the Israeli occupation forces killed at least 17 Palestinian civilians and members of those committees in Al-Shaja'iyya neighborhood after targeting Al-Shaja'iyya club, including, as you know, members of the police of the Palestinian police in Gaza City. So these crimes is still continued with the insistence of the Israeli occupation forces to deepen the suffering of the Palestinian people and starving the Palestinian people. Here, when it comes to the western part of Gaza City, particularly the surrounding areas of the Al-Shifa Medical Complex, as you know, the Israeli aggression against that area is still persistent and continued with more airstrikes, more attacks, and more killing of the Palestinian people. According to Gaza's health ministry, that the Israeli occupation forces have killed and unalived at least 400 Palestinian civilians since the beginning of this brutal aggression against the Al-Shifa Medical Complex and that area. And needless to mention that thousands of the Palestinian civilians were kidnapped and abducted by the Israeli occupation forces, and in addition to the massive destruction that was inflicted over the ceaseless Israeli attacks that targeted that area.
Several UN agencies have called for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza as the death toll from the onslaught continues to rise. International organizations, including UNICEF and UNRWA, said that an immediate ceasefire is needed in Gaza to save the lives of people and to provide necessary humanitarian aid. The organizations also warned about the spread of diseases. They said Gaza's health system is collapsing. On Saturday, the World Health Organization said thousands of Palestinians have to be urgently evacuated out of Gaza for life-saving health services. Israeli forces have shot dead a Palestinian for allegedly attempting a stabbing attack in the southern city of Beersheba. Israeli media identified the Palestinian as a young man without offering further details. Israeli authorities said that he was killed on the spot after wounding two people with a knife at Beersheba's main bus station. Palestinians launched a new wave of deadly attacks against Israeli targets since the regime began its onslaught on the Gaza Strip on October 7. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent from Ramallah, Mona Kandil, to get more details about the Beersheba incident.
This Palestinian man arrived at the central bus station in Beer Sebeh, or as the Israelis called as Beer Sheva, and then he had a knife. He stabbed Israelis, wounding at least two. One of them is an Israeli soldier. Israeli police there opened fire, shot him and killed him on the spot, and later they revealed his identity, that he is a man from the Rahat area in the Naqab desert. So we have to mention that in recent months there had been an escalation of anti-Israeli operations, whether stabbings or even opening fire at Israeli forces in the lands that were occupied in 1948, and the Palestinians who are still living in these areas are able to confront the Israeli aggression and the Israeli occupation of 1948 to prove once again that they are Palestinians and that they are still holding to their Palestinian nationality, despite the fact that there are strict measures are being imposed by the Israelis here in the occupied West Bank, in Al-Quds and in the 1948 areas. But at the end of the day, Palestinians are doing their utmost to continue carrying out from a time to another anti-Israeli operations.
The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it has carried out fresh attacks against Israeli positions in response to the regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza. The resistance group said that it struck a vital target in the Galilee region north of occupied Palestine using drones. It said the attack was in response to the massacres committed by Israel against Palestinian civilians, including women, children, and the elderly. The group said that it will continue its operations against Israeli strongholds. In recent months, the Islamic Resistance in Iraq has carried out a series of attacks against Israeli positions. It has also hit U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria, retaliation for Washington's support for the Israeli genocide in Gaza. Secretary General of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad Movement, Ziad al-Nakhala, has met with Iran's Foreign Minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, in Tehran. The meeting comes only a few days after the political bureau chief of Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, arrived in the Iranian capital for high-level talks. Gisumi Shahmadi has the details.
The grounds of solidarity on full display. Secretary General of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad Movement, Ziad al-Nakhala, meeting with Iran's Foreign Minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, to discuss the latest developments in Gaza and the ongoing genocidal war. And later, taking to the same podium as the political bureau chief of Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, took less than a week ago to thank Iran for playing an important role in supporting the resistance of the Palestinian people.
The Palestinian resistance has always been supported by Iran, which has paid the price for constantly defending Palestinians' rights. Iran's active diplomacy played a leading role in clarifying the position of Palestine's resistance, and the Palestinian people will eventually achieve a final victory in their fight against Israel. They will be a model for all the people of the world.
Words that echo comments made by Ismail Haniyeh, who is also in Tehran for high-level talks. Both officials have met with Iran's leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, and other high-ranking officials, including the Iranian president.
These meetings with high-ranking Iranian officials show that Iran plays a significant role as a consulting party. It also shows the high level of coordination between Iran and the axis of resistance, sending a clear message that Iran will always support Palestine.
Meanwhile, these meetings in Tehran come after a UN Security Council resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, as the U.S. for the first time abstained from the vote, leaving Israel isolated.
The timing of the visits by senior Palestinian officials to Tehran is quite significant, given that, in the course of time, what we have been seeing in the other front, meaning between Israel and its allies, including the United States, is a division among them, and we're seeing that Israelis are losing political and international support day by day. There are issues related to the future of Gaza, future of the war, and some political efforts in order to establish a ceasefire in Palestine. And I think those are important issues which can be and have been raised and discussed in the meetings held in Tehran.
The presence of Palestinian officials in Tehran is a clear display of unity at a time when the international community is showing more solidarity with Palestinians than ever before. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
People across the world are continuing to display their support for the people in Gaza as the regime presses ahead with its genocide in the besieged strip. The U.S. cities of New York and Seattle were the scenes of some of the latest such demonstrations. The protesters call for a ceasefire in Gaza and an end to Israeli occupation of Palestinian territories. The protest was held on Palestinian Land Day. That's an annual commemoration of the deadly 1976 crackdown by Israeli forces on protests against the regime's land seizures. The event was also marked in New York City, where police forces clashed with protesters and made arrests. The demonstrators torched an Israeli flag and called for an end to U.S. military support for Israel. Pro-Palestinian protests were also held elsewhere across the world, including in London and in Belfast.
It was the 11th time the British capital had played host to another national demonstration against the U.S.-led Israeli genocide of Palestinians inside Gaza. Coincidentally, this march was taking place on an auspicious day for Palestinians. March 30th is commemorated as Land Day to mark the 1976 Israeli killing of six Palestinians and the wounding of scores more who had gathered to show their affinity for a land that has literally witnessed the constant shedding of Palestinian blood. In an act of solidarity with Palestine, central London showed it would not be letting up on the pressure. Flash forward to this most recent attempt to ethnically cleanse Palestine of its people, and it's clear the UK is being blasted for its complicity in allowing a ceasefire motion to go unacknowledged by Tel Aviv. A comparatively small counter-demo by pro-Israel supporters was peacefully drowned out by pro-Palestinians. The protesters taking part in the demo had a variety of reasons why their presence on the marches mattered.
We just want to bring this conflict into the consciousness of everyone, so everyone understands what's going on here. You know, children being slaughtered, you know, women being slaughtered, schools and hospitals just completely destroyed. You know, it's just inhumane. It's just beyond imagination.
We have to stop this. We have to. Don't you? No one can be blind to what's happening. It has to stop. It has to stop. Showing ourselves like this, demonstrating how horrified and outraged we are, and then boycott Israel.
Demonstrators have pledged to keep turning out in the streets to protest against the genocide in Gaza until there's a cessation of violence and justice for Palestinians. Amina Taylor, London.
Polls open in Turkey's local elections where people vote to choose mayors and provincial council members across the country's 81 provinces. Turkey's capital, Ankara, and main city, Istanbul, will be the key battlegrounds between the ruling Justice and Development Party and the opposition. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has described Istanbul as the national jewel and hopes that his AK party regains the city after losing it to the Republican People's Party in 2019. It is believed that Istanbul's mayor, Ekrem İmamoğlu, will be the main challenger to the ruling party in the 2028 presidential vote if re-elected. March 31 is a pivotal date in Iran's modern history, marking the 45th anniversary of the day that millions of Iranians voted in favor of establishing the Islamic Republic system. This historic referendum fulfilled the nation's long-cherished democratic aspirations, giving rise to a governance system rooted in the will of the people. A correspondent has a report.
Iran commemorates the 45th anniversary of the Islamic Republic's inception, a significant event that falls on March 31st this year. This commemoration honors the momentous day when, shortly after the fall of the U.S.-supported Pahlavi regime in 1979, millions of Iranians participated in a landmark referendum. This vote effectively concluded over two millennia of monarchical rule in Iran, An overwhelming 98.2% of the electorate endorsed the formation of an Islamic Republic. Regarded as a watershed in Iran's contemporary narrative, the referendum was a manifestation of the nation's enduring quest for an Islamic democracy. Despite numerous challenges since the revolution's inception, Iranians have charted a path of success through steadfastness and resolve, positioning themselves as an exemplar for nations aspiring to freedom.
Thank God, Iran is now under the magnifying glass of other countries. We have now become a role model for regional and Muslim countries, and they look up to us.
The principles of independence and liberty central to the Iranian populace's overwhelming endorsement of the Islamic Republic 45 years ago continue to be the government's defining features.
The Islamic Republic Day is widely venerated by Iranians as a day that puts on display the power of people in determining the destiny of their country. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Listeners Special. In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this Sunday, March 31st, 2024. I'm Atef Erfani, hosting this program today. And as tomorrow, April 1st, corresponds with the 21st of the holy month of Ramadan, I, on behalf of all IRIB English Radio staff, express my condolences to you on the martyrdom anniversary of the Commander of the Faithful and the first infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him. As you may know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So, please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. And as usual, we've received reception reports from around the world, this time from Harald Seuss from Austria, from Bala Murali from India, and from Najmuddin from Bangladesh. All of them are old and loyal listeners. So, Najmuddin, Bala Murali, and Harald Seuss, thank you very much for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. We just wanted you to know how much we value your support and commitment to our radio. And we've received emails from around the world, this time from Malik Allah Bachaya from Pakistan. Here we've received an email from Lu Dacheng from China, and Harald Seuss from Austria has sent us a piece of email. Later during the program, I will read these emails.
Welcome back. This is another edition of Listeners Special. Undoubtedly, visiting holy and religious places gives us a special calm and peace in the heart. For many years, Iran has been a perfect destination for Muslims from all around the world, having housed some of the most beautiful, stunning shrines in its chest. In Iran, we have many religious sites, just like the holy shrine of Imam Reza, peace upon him, in Mashhad, Shah Abdul Azim Shrine in Ray, Shah Cheragh in Shiraz, Imam Zadeh Saleh Shrine in Tehran, and so many other places. And this time, I've decided to introduce you the holy shrine of Lady Fatemeh Masumeh, peace upon her, in the holy city of Qom, which after Imam Reza's shrine is the largest religious pilgrimage site in Iran. Now, before talking about the holy shrine of Lady Fatemeh Masumeh, peace upon her, let's read a piece of email from Malik Allah Bochaya from Pakistan. Malik Allah Bochaya says, "Dear staff, English radio service programs play a crucial role in disseminating information about the world to listeners across the globe. Your programs serve as a vital source of news, analysis, and cultural exchange, fostering understanding and connectivity among diverse communities. Moreover, English service radio programs offer in-depth analysis and commentary on various global issues, providing listeners with valuable insights and perspectives. Through interviews with experts, policymakers, and eyewitnesses, whether discussing conflicts, diplomatic negotiations, or socioeconomic trends, these programs help audiences grasp the intricacies of global dynamics. In addition to news and analysis, English service programs also promote cultural exchange and understanding. Through features, documentaries, and interviews with artists, writers, and cultural figures from diverse backgrounds, these programs showcase the richness and diversity of human experience. Overall, IRIB English radio programs play a vital role in informing, educating, and connecting audiences around the world. By providing timely news coverage, insightful analysis, cultural exchange, looks forward to hearing from you. Regards. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, Iran, to Malik Allah Bochaya from Pakistan. Many thanks for writing to us, IRIB English Radio. I do appreciate you for letting us know what you think about our programs, and it's really good to know that you have a positive view about our broadcast. Again, thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio, Malik Allah Bochaya from Pakistan. So please accept our electronic QSLS confirmation to this email. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Welcome back. So, I was saying, the holy city of Qom is the religious center of Iran and the city with the most pilgrims after Mashhad. The magnetic holy gem shining brightly at the center of this city is the shrine of Lady Fatemeh Masumeh, peace upon her, daughter of Imam Musa Kazem, the seventh infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Lady Fatemeh Masumeh, peace upon her, is also the sister of Imam Reza, the eighth infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, Imam whose shrine is located in Mashhad. Many believers go all the way to Qom to pay homage to the innocent lady. The intricate tile work and the picture of golden dome accompanied by the azure blue and turquoise color on the minarets absorb the soul of the prayers and grant them an unbelievable level of calmness and tranquility. The shrine catches everyone's attention when it comes to architectural beauty and the staggering design of patterns. The floral motifs under the alcoves and the impressive calligraphy and inscriptions in perfect harmony with the spirit of the place mesmerize you. The different courtyards of the holy shrine reflect several decades of Iranian history and architecture. And later during the program, I will talk about these great courtyards. Now, let's see what Lu Dacheng from China says. Lu Dacheng from China says, "Dear friends at English section of IRIB Radio. Hello, I am Lu Dacheng from China. I am your loyal listener. I always listen to your programs on shortwave. I know the Islamic Republic of Iran. I know it is an Islamic country. So hereby, I'd like to say Happy Ramadan to all your Muslim listeners. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, Iran. Lu Dacheng from China. Please accept our warm gratitude to you for this email and thank you very much for your Ramadan wishes to us and to all our Muslim listeners. Please write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. An electronic QSL will soon be sent to you as confirmation to your email." So, I was talking about the different courtyards of the holy shrine of Lady Fatima Masuma, peace upon her. It has courtyard of Sahib al-Zaman. This courtyard, together with its houses, has an area of 8,000 square meters and it has entrances on four directions. This courtyard, with its rooms together, has an area of 8,000 square meters. Its structure is designed with beautiful Quranic inscriptions written in Kufic script that attracts the interest of visitors and pilgrims to the new structure built by white cement and bricks. A beautiful pool with a new design is built in the middle of this courtyard using lightning technology. It has a nice exhibit at night. And this shrine has also Najme Khatun Shabestan, which is a prayer hall. This Shabestan is located at the bottom of the Imam Khomeini Shabestan with an area of 8,000 square meters. It is built with a special architectural features and is used for holding religious ceremonies. Also, during pilgrimage seasons, when the holy shrine is overcrowded, it is allocated for women. There is a level difference of about 50 centimeters high in the middle part of this Shabestan as a new design that has produced a very special effect. Also, there is Imam Khomeini Shabestan. This Shabestan or prayer hall has an area of 8,000 square meters with entrances on all four sides. There are short pillars around the Shabestan where a half floor is built on them. There are also four high pillars in the middle of this area and a low square-shaped dome is mounted over them. On the Qibla side of the Shabestan, there is a magnificent altar that is mihrab, which displays the fine taste of Iranian architecture. Also, there is the courtyard of Imam Hadi, peace upon him, and the courtyard of Imam Reza, peace upon him. In the beautiful courtyard of Imam Reza, peace upon him, there are north, south, east, and west porches. These luxurious porches, particularly the mirror porch and the pool and the waterfront in the center of the holy courtyard with the special features, renovated in their traditional form in 2011, have multiplied the beauty of this holy site. Welcome back. And I was talking about your emails, Harald Seuss from Austria. As I said earlier in the program, has sent us a piece of email. Harald Seuss is one of our loyal listeners who says, "Dear staff, I could receive an IRIB program during my trip. I have made a reception report. Please see the attachment." If my report is correct, I would ask you if you can verify it by a QSL card. I send you and all the colleagues in your English department my best wishes, best regards. Salam and warm greetings from Tehran, Iran, to you, Harald Seuss from Austria. Thank you very much for writing to us. So please accept our EQSL as confirmation to this email. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. So, dear listeners, today the shrine of our innocent Lady of Qom, Lady Fatima Masuma, peace upon her, is the cynosure of the eyes of the faithful from all over the world. While the city of Qom has become the center of diffusion of the genuine teachings of Prophet, as bequeathed by the immaculate progeny of the Prophet, the Ahlul Bayt, peace upon them. Aras tomorrow, April 1st, corresponds with the 21st of the holy month of Ramadan. I, on behalf of all IRIB English Radio staff, express my condolences to you on the martyrdom anniversary of the Commander of the Faithful and the first infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Ali, peace upon him. Dear listeners, here we've come to the end of our today's program. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with us. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Spotlight. Israel has carried out its deadliest attacks in months on Syria, leaving dozens of people dead. The aggression has coincided with a drone attack launched by terrorists in Idlib. Israel has also ramped up its deadly airstrikes on Lebanon in recent days. This is while the regime is pressing ahead with its genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, and there seems to be no end in sight to the nearly six-month assault despite growing international pressure. On this edition of Spotlight, we'll try to find out why Israel is trying to increase tensions and what would be the repercussions of such an escalation for the entire region and beyond. Our guests on tonight's Spotlight are international human rights defender Ziad Ibrahim Patel, joining us from Johannesburg. And we also have human rights activist Mohsen Naqvi joining us from Houston, Texas. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Patel in Johannesburg. It's great to have you with us, sir. Now, Israel, as we mentioned in our intros, launched a fresh attack on Syria, targeting a number of locations in the northwestern city of Aleppo. The attack has left a number of civilians and military personnel dead. It's damaged public and private property. Now, the Syrian military said the Israeli aggression coincided with a drone attack by terrorist organizations launched from Idlib and the western countryside of Aleppo as the massacre in Gaza rages on, how do you perceive the Israelis' actions in other areas of the region? And how much of this increased aggression would you say is tied to Israel's failures in Gaza?
Yes, indeed. This is the normal course of action that Israel has been doing over many years. And as the war rages, quite rightly, in Gaza, in fact, the genocide as it rages quite in Gaza, Israel is feeling the pressure. It's feeling the pressure of their resistance movements that have continued unabated, as Israel has continued unabated in its atrocities and crimes against Palestinians. And we got to put this in context, that all these extraterritorial attacks are unlawful under international law. To conduct these strikes in Syria, and again, we got to look at what was military advantage and compared to what human causation. In other words, what was the human beings that were lost in this? You know, they would call this so for instance, human beings and innocent are always caught up in this conflict, unfortunately. But this continues, and Israel, we must hold Israel to account. But unfortunately, this is the situation because Israel feels that it's losing control in terms of its fight against the resistance movements, and will try to suppress and equalize where it perceives threats to be. And that's why we're seeing this increased attacks in the region.
Moussa Naqvi, let's also focus on the growing tensions between Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement and forces of the Israeli regime. The Israelis have targeted a vehicle in the city of Tyre with a drone, leaving one Lebanese dead. Hezbollah has also carried out retaliatory missile strikes on Israeli positions in the occupied territories. Are the Israelis actively pursuing more tensions in the region, and how do they benefit from this?
I think this is a sign of Israel being very vulnerable and a sign of them being weak. So because they're being defeated in the Gaza Strip, the solution that they're trying to come up with is to expand the war in the region, to create chaos in the region. And that's why we see them acting so erratically, where now they've attacked Syria. The fighting on the northern front with Hezbollah has been happening since October 7th, in which many of Hezbollah's fighters have been martyred, but Hezbollah has also been retaliating to strategically retaliating to Israel's attacks as well. And as a matter of fact, I wouldn't be exaggerating in stating that the role that Hezbollah has played on the northern front has led to thousands, over 10,000 settlers evacuating from that part of occupied Palestine. So Hezbollah is playing that very key role. So it is quite clear that just how Israel sees Hamas as a threat, just like they see Syria as a threat, they see Hezbollah as a threat equivalent to that of Palestinian freedom fighters. So in short, if we summarize and if we conclude that the Zionist regime of Israel considers the axis of resistance as a threat, as a genuine threat to its very existence, then we can understand the attacks on Israel. We can understand the constant attacks on the southern front in Lebanon as well. And ironically and unfortunately, the Zionist regime, another sign of their weakness is that for the most part, their targets are usually civilians, may that be in Palestine, Syria, or even Lebanon. Whereas the resistance front has always focused on targeting military personnel. And adding to the point that my colleague made earlier about Syria, I think it's important to note that the fact that Idlib, the attack of terrorists in Idlib, was seemed almost coordinated with Israel's attacks, goes on to show that these splinter groups, these terrorist groups who've been operating in Idlib, who were operating in Syria, and they were kicked out by Hezbollah in Syria, have always been a proxy of the U.S. empire and the Zionist regime. They've always served their purpose. So those who are criticizing Hezbollah of intervening in Israel, in intervening in Syria, now understand and now know why Syria has always been of such great importance to the axis of resistance.
Mr. Patel, how important has this unified response been from the resistance front in the region? There's Lebanon, Yemen, Iraq, resistance groups in Syria. Were the Israelis in Washington expecting that from all of the resistance fronts in the region?
I think we all know that Palestine has been in a state of resistance for several decades, undergoing belligerent military occupation in the occupied Palestinian territories and in occupied Palestine at large. We've always known, and I mean the enemies of Palestine, the Americans, the Israelis, have always known that there are certain groups that will be steadfast to the standing with the resistance of Palestine, which is a fundamental right under international law, because the right to resistance is strongly associated to the right of self-determination, and Palestinians need to exert that right. So I think in some cases they may have been surprised by the broadening of the axis of resistance, as we've seen the Houthi Yemenis in Yemen, closure of the Red Sea, the stopping of ships in that area, and stopping that kind of cargo, which is a very good BDS campaign. And then we've seen the axis of resistance, Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, northern occupied Palestine, and of course in Syria and Iraq. And that needs to broaden. We need to look at this also from the context that we've got Arab countries around Palestine, Syria, Jordan, or well, let me rather put Jordan, Egypt, and other countries that have normalized, some countries have normalized with the Zionist regime. And we've seen that there's been no real military intervention despite the carnage in Gaza. And just coming back to my previous point, and I think it's important what my colleague mentioned, is that in all of the attacks by these terror groups and Israel and backed by the U.S., and of course we must also remember that the European Union and European Union countries sell huge and license huge volumes of arms to Israel. And this is being used indiscriminately for many years, since I think the 2009 war, when we lodged the first docket criminal complaint against Israel with South African authorities. We had focused on war crimes, where Israel has perpetually used indiscriminate use of force and indistinction of military target to civilian population. That has continued. Israel continues to be responsible, criminally responsible for egregious crimes, such as crimes against humanity, crimes of apartheid, torture, forced displacement, and many other crimes. And of course, now we see genocide. Whereas the armed resistance of armed resistance groups have had focused, targeted areas. And I think when we look at this, it needs to be looked at, is it from the perspective of international law and what are the laws of war and what must, you know, what must be complied with and what are the levels that a certain, use of force right. must comply with? Or do we need to look at it from an Islamic perspective of what our responsibilities are? And I think the resistance groups are very conscious of the Islamic responsibilities in terms of conflict and how to, ward off the aggressor in these instances.
Yes, let's go back to Mr. Nahvi. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has defiantly vowed to go ahead with this military campaign, this genocidal massacre, saying that the international pressure on his regime will not work. Have all the years of impunity and U.S. cover for Israel made this child-killing regime believe that it's actually above the law and it's safe from accountability?
Absolutely. There's absolutely no doubt about that, that the Zionist regime, independent of the U.S., is nothing. It has no power. The only reason why the Zionist regime has been imposed on the region of West Asia is because of the support that it gains from the U.S. Within the international community. We now see that the European Union is also taking a very clear stance in shifting away from being a party to the Zionist, the Israeli Zionist crime that they're committing in Gaza today. We see them taking a slightly different line from the Zionist regime. But the one country that we still see to date that unequivocally supports the Israeli regime, may that be militarily, may that be diplomatically, may that be in the international arena, in the United Nations, that is the United States of America. So now it makes sense when Imam Khomeini said that America is the great Satan, that America is Shaitan and Buzurg. When Imam Khomeini said that, many must have not understood that statement before. But it is now seen, we can now conclude that the statement that was made by Imam Khomeini, it had a lot of wisdom in it. Is the Zionist regime is not the real issue, but it is rather the policies of the US empire that has empowered this weak, this so-called state, this occupying power, which is as weak as the spider's web in that region. And another statement that I would like to make in addition to the previous question that was asked a few minutes back is that when the Zionist regime tries to target military personnel from Hezbollah, like they targeted Shahid Ali Abdul Hassan Naim, who was one of the leaders of the heavy warhead rocket fire unit of Hezbollah, they need to understand that, and they already know, but just to kind of reiterate for the audience, is that Hezbollah is a very organized, it's an organized military giant in the region now. They thought that they'll be able to weaken Hezbollah when Imad Mughniyeh was martyred. They thought that after Jihad Mughniyeh is martyred, when Shahid Badruddin is martyred, or when Shahid Abbas Musawi or Sheikh Raghib or Hadi Nasrullah, when they're martyred, Hezbollah will become weak. But history has shown us that the school of martyrdom within Hezbollah has only strengthened Hezbollah and has made them into the giant that they are today. They are so organized that they work in ways that they always have parallel leaderships within their divisions, like any other military power.
Mr. Patel, Hamas has hailed a ruling by the International Court of Justice ordering the Israeli regime to address famine in Gaza. The reaction came after the ICJ ordered Israel to allow the immediate delivery of humanitarian supplies into Gaza. Hamas has called on the international community to create a mechanism to ensure the order's implementation. How do you see that happening? What would be step one in your opinion?
Yes, I think this is an important development. And to give your viewers context, I think South Africa has been busy with this since January or December, when the hearings initially started at the International Court of Justice. The application was made. And in fact, the ICJ has now issued three orders in terms of provisional measures. Initially, the provisional measures were very clear and succinct that there needs to be a humanitarian corridor and there needs to be access to aid. And that was one of the conditions. We saw the United States and Israel use it in a different way. They've used the hasbara and the spin on the order, stating that the word ceasefire was not included. But the order could not be effected without an effective ceasefire because of the humanitarian aid that was required at scale. Subsequently to that, South Africa requested further measures to the International Court of Justice. And the response from the ICJ was that no further provisional measures were required. Israel was bound to the initial order that was given by the court. And just recently, the order based on famine and starvation, we know that the catastrophic situation that now exists in Gaza, northern Gaza is effectively now separated from southern Gaza. Netanyahu has spoken about a demilitarized zone, which means effectively more belligerent military occupation. And certainly that famine and starvation is a serious problem. South Africa in its application stated that there's almost a concern for about 80,000 civilian deaths that are imminent if this problem is not seriously redressed, as there's imminent harm to a civilian population. And of course, there was also the UN rapporteur that came out with her report, An Anatomy of a Genocide, claiming that Israel is guilty of at least 3 of the 5 acts in terms of the Genocide Convention. So the international pressure is mounting. The international community has spoken clearly through the General Assembly. Unfortunately, the UN Security Council has always been politicized, and we've seen the number of vetoes that the US has exercised. But my view, and I've just come back from Tehran recently, is that there's nothing stopping Islamic states or Muslim countries from intervening in this crisis. And in fact, my belief is that they should have intervened from the very outset, because we know that Israel is now a ultra-right Zio-fascist government, and they've been hell-bent on the destruction of the Palestinian population. We're not only seeing this genocide unfold in Gaza, but also the increased raids in the occupied Palestinian territories. So Muslim countries and countries should intervene, but they need to be politically enabled and not be politically influenced and controlled, unfortunately, by the Western powers that have neutralized them. That is the reality of the fact, that they've been utterly neutralized. Indeed. Only way that we gain being able to see any movement is through the resistance or the axis of resistance, but they're not going to be enabled to be able to provide the humanitarian aid at scale. So I think we've got to insist on the international measures and the international community to force Israel to comply with the International Court of Justice orders, that humanitarian aid be delivered,
right,
that access to borders be opened, and that it be provided to the needs of the Gazan population.
Mohsen Naavi, we're running short of time, but I want you to discuss a video that surfaced showing Israeli forces executing unarmed Palestinians near Gaza's coast. They were waving white flags in a show of surrender. The Israeli soldiers, after murdering them, they went on to bury their bodies in the sand with a bulldozer. Is this a clear indication that this genocidal massacre has not only been a war against Gaza's resistance, but actually against all of its people?
Absolutely. The resistance has simply been used as a pretext. The civilians in Gaza have not, this is not recent. This war did not start after October 7th, as most of the world might think. But this genocide against the innocent civilians of Gaza is exactly why you now have freedom fighters in the shape of Hamas, Islamic Jihad, the Al-Aqsa Martyr Brigades, who are now defending the very rights of their people. And also, I would like to reiterate the fact that to go down on such low levels, to assault and to disrespect civilians in such a manner can only be expected of the Zionist regime, and only goes on to show how weak they are. That because they cannot fight like real men, they can't fight the military, they can't fight Palestinian freedom fighters, they exert their frustration and their pressure on innocent civilians by disrespecting and insulting them like this. But they need to understand that this regime is only exposing themselves when they act in such a manner.
Okay, I'm sorry, we're running short of time now. Allow me to thank my guests, Ziad Ibrahim Patel, international human rights defender, joining us from Johannesburg, and human rights activist Mohsen Naavi, speaking to us from Houston, Texas. Thank you, gentlemen, and also allow me to thank our viewers for staying with us on tonight. Spotlight is good night for now, and see you next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering it down some questions and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah هو ذا الرحمن
Allah
هو ذا المنان
لا إله إلا.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I am Atta, the host of this program. For today's discussion, we have invited Sheikh Rouhani and a special guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom to answer questions related to Islamic beliefs. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Inshallah, inshallah, inshallah, you'll find your way.
Okay, Sheikh Rouhani, Imam Ali alayhi salam was assassinated by Ibn Muljam on the 19th night of the holy month of Ramadan, and he got martyred on the 21st of the holy month of Ramadan. So many people say that Imam, because of the divine knowledge that had, he knew that if he goes to the mosque to lead the prayer, he would be struck with the sword of Ibn al-Muljam. But he did so, and even they say that Ibn al-Muljam was sleeping in the mosque. Imam went to him and woke him up. To do his prayer. Why Imam Ali alayhi salam would do such an action? Isn't it, for example, a kind of suicide or commitment to suicide or what?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know, this question asked from many scholars.
Yes.
In the history of the tashayyu. Let me mention some of the answers that are given to this question by some of the great scholars. One of the answers is the answer of Shaykh Mufid, radwanullahi ta'ala alayh. according to his response, though the Imam had the knowledge about his martyrdom that it will happen in that mosque in a night of the holy month of Ramadan, for example, in, for example, night of 21st, for example. But according to him, and according to some other scholars, Imam knew that he will be martyred in one night of the holy month of Ramadan, and that night will be, for example, the night of Qadr, for example, or night of 21st, for example, in Sahar of that month. But the question is that was that night exactly?